Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to learn about how theanine, that's an amino acid, improves your neurophysiological measures of attention. This is a university in Sri Lanka. We're also going to learn today about how if you lose your appetite, and a lot of people do, especially people who've been using chemotherapy or radiation treatment, out of Japan, from Kyoto University, nutmeg oil can bring it back. Also today, they're looking at the remarkable improvements in childhood autism symptoms from Kaleo Health Clinic in Canada and Alberta Children's Hospital, published in Journal of Medical Case Reports, using cannabis, the oil. We'll get into that. Also today, if you have an elevated homocysteine level, you're going to increase your risk of heart attack, stroke, and Alzheimer's disease. Temple University, what can we do to stop that, to reverse it? Also very important, for breakthroughs in slowing aging, scientists must look beyond biology. University of Southern California, published in the peer-reviewed journal Aging Research Reviews. I'm going to go in depth on all these, especially the last one, because it was interesting. I had two groups of scientists who were overseeing the anti-aging clinical studies I've done the last year and 4 months. One group looked at the biology. They wanted to look at what actually was objective, meaning you had one level of something before and a different level in the blood afterwards. And that they considered really hard objective evidence. But the other group of scientists, both very distinguished, one representing 56,000 scientists in anti-aging and the other more. And the other one was more interested in the psychosociological impact of the protocol I created that would impact the behavior and hence the DNA without the diet, supplementation, and exercise. And two different perspectives from the same person, one choosing to look in a very narrowly defined way at just the blood chemistry improvements, and the other looking at things that are far more intrinsic to how long we're going to live, our happiness. I made a statement to both groups. I said, you're not going to live a long life if you're not happy. Therefore, the foundation upon which all of this rests is happiness. Because one was questioning that in one group, they insisted I do lectures on biochemistry, and my entire lifetime worth of research as a senior research fellow in anti-aging medicine. Tell them about the cells, the telomeres. The other group, and I did, the other group, I didn't do a single lecture on health. Not one. 56 lectures, all on behavior. Guess which group had the greatest improvements and is lasting? So that's part of our show today. The other part of our program today is we're going to take a look at some other things that are occurring. For example, about how we're not paying attention to the oceans and the rivers. 1 in 3 freshwater fish, vital to food and jobs for millions, is facing extinction. We're doing nothing about it. Oh, and 22 elderly with dementia are dead in 1 week after the experimental RNA COVID injections in the Netherlands. I've already told you about all the people who were in nursing homes who died. This is from St. Elizabeth Nursing Home, and they died, 22. So we said, let's get the vaccine to those in the nursing homes. I said, bad idea. They said, no, get it to these people. I said, have you read the scientific peer-reviewed literature on autoimmune conditions, which are rampant, epidemic, in people in senior citizen assisted living center, nursing homes, and hospice care? They rushed through with political agendas, economic agendas, and now we're seeing all these people dying. So what can I tell you? I'm never going to tell anyone to take or not take a vaccine. I'm telling you, stop believing anything Anthony Fauci, the CDC, the New York Times, any of the stupid idiots on television, which are almost all of them stupid idiots, and start looking at for yourself at the scientific literature. If you have an autoimmune condition and you know that that puts you at risk of any overstimulation of the immune system, and you give some form of a vaccine that overstimulates that immune response, then you're suddenly in the twilight zone, and that's where these deaths are occurring. But will they learn? Not at all. Will they keep killing people? Doesn't matter to them. They don't give a damn about how many people die. Look at Cuomo. If Cuomo had any decency at all, he would have walked away, resigned, and spent the rest of his life at some monastery in Italy and ruminating, maybe reading the text of St. Francis of Assisi. He could learn something and say he was wrong. He caused the death of at least minimal 3,000 people, maximum 10,000 people. Doesn't matter whether it's 3,000, 3,000, or 10,000. If you knowingly make a mistake, cover it up, and then double down on defending yourself, you're the problem. But we as society are the problem. We've been focusing on fear, making our choices based upon fear, and we shouldn't. So just remember, I'm finding the peer-reviewed science showing who's dying, where, how old they are, and what they're dying from. And that's just immediately afterwards. So keep that in mind, because we've got some serious problems to deal with. Also, from The Guardian, an article I read this morning, I tested my tap water, household products, and my cat. And my cat and I were toxic with forever chemicals. I'm going to share some of this with you because nobody, as a percentage in our society, is looking at how toxic is the environment they're living in. With all these convenient products, we'll look at that today. Also, we're going to play a few videos today, and I'm going to share some insights and ask you to share some insight. I'm also going to do a commentary, and I want to thank John Whitehead for his Machinery of Death article. As always, he is one of our finest constitutional lawyers, and he's given us a lot to think about. I'll be adding my own comments on to that. So that's our program. We have a lot to share. I'm going to play as many of these as I can from News Roundup. Merck challenges the safety and validity of ivermectin, and yet Merck is the one who's paid the fines, has engaged in all forms of criminal activity, and who has nothing of value to add from my perspective. And yet ivermectin is the one drug that could stop COVID in its tracks if you take it early. Or even if you take it in a hospital, it can stop you going into a worse state. No mention of that. Millennials in the workforce, a generation of weakness, so says Simon Sinek. And then we may play Dr. James Lyon Weiler on COVID vaccine. That's our program. We have a lot to share. One quick mention. I'm going to be having my webinar this coming Sunday, and we're for the first round, we're full. I'm going to ask Glenn to expand our bandwidth. However, I gained something from that, since I'm not just talking about AIDS, but I'm also talking about COVID, all the latest information with the world's leading experts. There's two different programs, two different videos, and I'm going to video stream it also, and a whole panel of experts. But she can't afford it. She's on Social Security. She only makes $700 a month, and she's got to pay everything on a $700 a month. Try that. So what I'm going to do for Shirley, but also everyone else in this audience, until we have no room, is if you are, and this is purely based upon trust, you are financially stressed and you cannot afford the small fee, then call this number, and it's on me, 646-926-5422. Then hit zero, ask for Jessica, and you must call that number to get to watch it for free. All right? And again, this is purely based upon a trust, and I trust the audience. So if you're having trouble, and I don't want you to be prevented from getting this very informative, important, life-saving information on Sunday. So now, Shirley, you don't have to worry. It's free. 646-926-5422, then dial 0, and we'll give you, take your information so you'll be able to watch it. We always begin with the latest on health and healing, and I'm going to go through these rather quickly because I want to get to these videos and discussions also. There's amino acid L-theanine, T-H-E-A, thea, 9, N-I-N-E. It improves your neurophysiological measures of attention, and that's important. This was done out of Sri Lanka at a major university. Now, we know that it calms the nerves. We know it's great for people with anxiety and loneliness. Take 200 milligrams of theanine. And by the way, you get theanine. If you take theanine in with the amino, with the nutrient that is so important for cancer. In fact, there are at least 100 different things it will do in the body. That's green tea. That helps keep you calm while taking it. In any case, they found that it enhances your attention, meaning your focus, disciplining your mind, and being able to walk in a room and know why you're there, knowing that your cognition is improved. And this was a double-blind, placebo-controlled, counterbalanced, four-way crossover study. This is the best you could do. And they used 100, 200, and 400 milligrams against a placebo. And they found that the 400 milligrams showed a significant reduction in latency of your mind being able to adjust to the environment you're in. So I would say almost anyone over the age of 50, you could be using this every day. A lot of people lose their appetite. I get a lot of calls and emails through the office. Oh, I'm taking chemotherapy. I don't have an appetite. I'm wasting away. A new study done at Kyoto University in Japan shows that both nutmeg and mace, M-A-C-E, these are culinary spices, just two of them, can restore appetite. All right? And nutmeg oil has traditionally been used to treat digestive issues such as bloating, gastrointestinal distress, and decreased appetite. This was published in the Journal of Natural Medicines. So nutmeg oil enhances your appetite and exhibits powerful anti-diabetic properties too. So it's good for diabetics. It's anti-inflammatory, antibacterial, anti-proliferative, anti-cholinergic, and hepatoprotective, protects your liver. So all that from that little tiny drop that you get out of there. Also a study from Kaleo Health Clinic in Canada shows that, this was published in Journal of Medical Case Reports, positive effects of cannabis extract and its association with improved autism-related behavior. That's important. So it targets what it does. It targets the ASD core behaviors. For example, repetitive behaviors and associated behaviors, for example, hyperactivity, aggression, anxiety, and sleep disturbances. It doesn't treat the core social communications deficits, but it does help all these others in substantial ways. So that's good. That's important. Easy to get. The CBD oil. So, quote, the subjects became more motivated, energetic, starting his own vegetarian diet and exercise programs, ultimately losing 6.4 kilograms. And you know, a kilogram, 2.2 pounds to a kilogram, and after starting CBD oil. So all that helping a person calm down. All right, that's good news. We have a nation of ticking time bombs in our chest. It's due to high homocysteine. That's where we get our risk of heart attacks, strokes, and Alzheimer's disease. So there's a need for this. Because remember, we have a minimum of 5 million Americans currently suffering from brain-wasting disease like Alzheimer's. We have tens of millions, probably over 100 million, suffering from some form of heart condition, high blood pressure. And by the way, elevated homocysteine can increase the risk of dementia up to tenfold. That's 1,000%. And that can affect brain aging and damage to the brain. It can include, for example, the formation of plaques and blood vessels that supply blood to the brain. It can include development of chronic inflammation in the brain, the shrinkage of areas of the brain associated with memory. So you don't want an elevated homocysteine level. Everybody should have your homocysteine levels checked at least twice a year, three times a year. This report was published in the Journal of Alzheimer's Disease. So what do we do? Okay, there's 4 things you can do that absolutely can make a difference immediately. Vitamin B6, 25 milligrams. Vitamin B12, 1 milligram methylated. Folic acid, 1 milligram methylated. Vitamin C, 2,000 milligrams. And that turns off your pro-inflammatory 5-LOX. It can make a big difference. It can bring your homocysteine level right down and keep it down. And finally, from the University of Southern California, they had an article in Aging Research Reviews, and they say that the geroscience, the study of how to slow biological aging, to extend lifespan and longevity, it almost always has been about the blood and biological markers. And indeed, that's part of it. But according to these papers, and thereby 3 pioneers in aging research, members of the National Academy of Medicine, they say we have to look at the intersection of biology and social factors in shaping healthy aging through lifespan. Well, I know that for a fact because mine's not theoretical. I've done the only 3 clinical studies ever done. They're all up for submission. They have been submitted for peer review. And we did a documentary on them as well, which still has one more area to film in the last 2 weeks of April. What I was able to achieve in 2 months, 3 months, 3 months with 2 different groups, that's a half a year of work put into it by myself and staff, we were able to accomplish in 2 weeks with follow-up. And that's because of Occam's razor. Occam, the 14th century mystic and philosopher, used the razor to cut through to go to what the answer is. And more often than not, the most reasonable answer is right in front of everyone. But we just can't handle that. It bogs our mind that something as complicated in its configurations, complexities as our problems, can have such simple answers. And I'm saying every answer is simple. Every solution is simple. Accepting it and applying it is the hard part. And that's why I did 56 lectures. Some of these lectures 3 hours long. In 2.5 weeks. In fact, I just lectured this morning. I've been interviewing people for a new special. And I was on doing a Zoom filming. I'll talk about it on an upcoming program for almost 6 straight hours. So I'm a little hoarse. In any case, so from my perspective, you tell me the problem, any problem. In fact, ask anyone who's ever been to my 5,000 plus lectures. Remember in New Jersey, over New Jersey, there was, I don't know where it was, the Garden State Center or one of the largest venues, because I remember when I walked in, my cinematographer says, we need more cameras. I said, well, we have 6. He said, this is a huge venue. So I don't know if he got more cameras, but that was a fun lecture. And so someone came up and said, what are you going to lecture about? I said, I have no idea. I'll know what I'm going to talk about when I look into the eyes of the people and read their energy. And so they played some music. I think it was Warren. I walked down the aisle, high-fiving people, and got down there. I took about 2 minutes just to look at the audience, and it was huge, thousands and thousands of people. And then I started to talk, and 3 hours later I finished. I have no idea what I said, but people liked it. And that's where you connect. You harmonize with, you give a solution, in what is called the gestalt. Before you knew there was a problem, you found the solution. And that's the key to quantum thinking, quantum living, quantum being. You harmonize at the higher level of our consciousness, where all truths are self-evident. So therefore, if someone says, what's our biggest problem right now socially in the United States? I would say the separation of people by artificial separating and by class. And when you separate people by class, then the people no longer feel that what they have is enough, and everyone who has more has not enough. So you have two outstanding negatives. I need more, even to survive, or I want more, even though my survival is guaranteed for the next 20 lifetimes with what I have in my possession. So why is it the richest people are never satisfied? They want more Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, you know, Elon Musk, and all the rest. And why is it that some of the poorest people in our society are not looked after at all, none of their needs? Before you put a man in prison, shouldn't you ask what are the circumstances in life that led him or her to commit a crime? And should that not also be taken into consideration in a humane society? Shouldn't you consider, is it better to put that person in prison where they'll learn no good lesson and only be betrayed by everyone in there, brutalized, probably raped, and with a system that doesn't care? So how can a system that's supposed to be offering us some rehabilitation at the same time put people in a place where there's only going to be punishment and fear? You see, it's a contradiction. Everything. People compare the problems with some police, and some police are a problem. They shouldn't be police. Therefore, the whole system of how a person is allowed to become a police officer must be challenged. But then again, that's only one piece of the puzzle. The judges are corrupt. The prosecuting attorneys are opportunists and careerists and corrupt. The media that covers it is biased frequently and corrupt. The system itself is based upon the for-profit mode, is corrupt. So if your entire system is corrupt, then how do you stop it? You have to create a new system. Other countries have done so. Why don't we look at Norway and Denmark, examples where there are no locks on the door, even for murderers. So how do you get away with that? Well, it works, Occam's razor. So you see, never confuse this. So when I was in front of that big audience, I asked, give me the hardest question that no one's ever been able to answer in your life and see if I can help you with it. Now, mind you, that's a tricky challenge. When was the last time you saw a strange audience they've never met and you're challenging them, ask me the toughest question in the world and see if I can help you? No, everything's off script. I don't use script. If you really trust yourself and you know that everything that you've ever had and been and seen and done and experienced is already in your mind, ready to be shared, just open yourself up and let it flow. And then suddenly you're in the moment and everything changes. Real healing comes when you're in the moment. That's why I emphasized, let's get in the moment. Let's go meditate with nature. What do you mean meditate with nature? Okay, let's take a walk. We took a walk. It was a 1 mile walk around the property. I then came back and I asked the people, how many birds did you hear? Birds? What birds? Well, you see, you were thinking and therefore distracted yourself, or talking and distracted yourself. Now let's take the same walk, but this time walk mindful of not to think or talk, but be present. And suddenly, oh, 15 different birds and all. And did you see the deer? No, we didn't see them. Well, you walk right by them twice. Now they see them. You see, everything is present. If we stop distracting ourselves. So our biggest problem of getting focused upon our disease, our wellness, our relationship is distraction. Stop distracting yourself. Then you can focus upon what is important, be more in the moment, and live a life as smooth as Fred Astaire danced. So that group had the greatest outcome and is sustaining it. Just to share that with you. So they were right out at UCLA. They just haven't done this kind of study. And you'll see the full impact of that when I bring out the documentary at some point. Now, as of yesterday, we're full. So I can't say to call Luann because she said, we're full. Okay, great. If we're full, there's always going to be people canceling. Two people canceled yesterday. I get the call. Can you believe this? I said, what? Two people canceled. So what? Yeah, well, you know why they canceled? Yeah, why? the weather. The weather? They cancel because of the weather? The weather's going to be 85 to 90 degrees in the mountains. Beautiful breezes. Warm butterflies. Being out in the sun. Oh, they're thinking that 3 degrees below zero that happened last week will be the same way in the late spring. That's a special kind of stupid, in my opinion. Whoa. If someone's going to cancel for that, they shouldn't be there at all because they're not going to get anything that I'm about or trying to share with them. Wow. You have to be on the other end of the calls we get. In any case, that's the latest on health and healing. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, a commentary that I think is timely that I need to share with you. And also, in the last week, think about this, and I'd like for you to call in. I'd like for you to hear your input, because we get a lot of really intelligent people who are sharing their insights with us. In the last 10 days, Tucker Carlson had on some of the finest liberal minds in American 21st century, and before that with Chris Hedges, and Glenn Greenwald twice, and Jimmy Dore last night. And Naomi was on, and I hadn't never seen her on that. They are on opposite ends of the spectrum. Well, I'm also on the opposite ends of many of the things that Tucker Carlson believes. But there's one thing I'm absolutely in alignment with him on, and I appreciate that he's opened up his forum, by the way, the most watched television program in America, in the news, cable system. He dwarfs all the others. But all these liberals are now going on there. So here's the question. Why don't you see any of these people any longer? Matt Taibbi, he was on there. Why don't you see any of these people on MSNBC or CNN or see them in the major media or being quoted in the New York Times or Washington Post, etc.? They've been excommunicated from the church, the cult of Orthodox belief, because they still dare to say something heretical. The truth. And today, telling the truth is a heretical offense. What does that tell us about the media? Not about Tucker Carlson. What does it tell us about the media? That some of the best and brightest, most courageous individuals cannot get a forum where they used to be every week they'd be on these programs. Not now. 888-874-4888 is our number, talkback number. 888-874-4888. Back in the 1970s and early 80s, I had a friend in New York. One of my friends was Frank Serpico, former police detective who exposed corruption within the NYPD, and then they tried to kill him. He's been spending decades up in the wilderness. And I'm looking forward to having him on the program. I haven't spoken to him in a long time. But he said something that deserves to be repeated today. He said, police fail to grasp that they are public servants for peace. They should provide a civil service to enforce the laws equally, without bias, and with discretion. They must understand that they do not have immunity or special privileges, and most importantly, are just responsible for apprehending suspects and should not act as judge, jury, and executioner, which too many of them truly believe themselves to be. The government should not be in the business of killing its citizens. Nevertheless, the U.S. government continues to act as judge, jury, and executioner over a populace that have been prejudged and found guilty, stripped of their rights, and left to suffer at the hands of government agents trained to respond with the utmost degree of violence. That's the death penalty. And it was recently abolished in Virginia. Good for them, but that's just the tip of the iceberg. While any effort to scale back the government's haphazard application of the death penalty meted out as a punishment, a threat, and a chilling glimpse into the government's quest for ultimate dominion over its constituents is a welcome one. Capital punishment remains a very small part of the American police state's machinery of death. Yet it's not enough to declare a moratorium on federal and state death penalty executions. What we need, in my opinion, is a moratorium on federal-state violence in all other forms, not just on police shootings of unarmed civilians and innocent civilians killed by the nation's endless wars abroad, unknowing victims of secret government experiments, politicians whose profit over principle priorities leave Americans vulnerable to predatory tactics. Because as long as government-sanctioned murder continues unabated, the right to life affirmed by the nation's founders in the Declaration of Independence remains unattainable. But you say, Gary, that is an exaggeration. It's not real. You think danger is real? The danger is real. Everything about the way the government operates today, imperial, unaccountable, manifestly corrupt at every level, every agency, every department, flies in the face of what the founders sought to bring about as representative government that exists to protect and preserve the life, liberty, property, and happiness of its individuals. Police violence is but one aspect of the government violence dispensed without restraint or respect for the rights of people, and it is widespread. The casualties are legion. You think about the people of color who've been killed, who were innocent of any crime, who've been stopped and searched, though they possessed nothing that did not belong to them. These are rampant forms of discrimination. Now ask yourself, when was the last time as a nation we galvanized all of our energies as one voice to say, stop blockades in the peninsulas, stop the destruction in Libya, rebuild the country? No, we've not done that, and we won't do it. And what about in Syria? There was no threat of Assad. He was not poisoning his public. Anyone who read any of the outstanding articles that we have brought the authors on this, Seymour Hersh's articles, would know that the white helmets are not to be given Academy Awards and praised, as been done on some Pacific radio programs, but rather they're terrorists. And they've been given hundreds of millions of dollars. And what about all the people starving today because we intervened? I put together 56 separate interventions by the CIA that they acknowledge. These have all come out. And all over the world, we've intervened, causing massive death and destruction to people. Have we ever apologized for one of them? None. Have we saw their people of all colors, ethnicities, and cultures made whole again, or even an effort to try to help them? None. So we should not look at what is happening in America as something unique to us. It is everywhere. At a time when growing numbers of unarmed people have been shot and killed for just standing a certain way or moving a certain way or holding something, anything the police could misinterpret to be a gun, or igniting some trigger-centric fear in a police officer's mind that has nothing to do with the actual threat to their safety, even the most benign encounters with police can have fatal consequences. Unfortunately, police, trained in the worst-case scenario and thus ready to shoot first and ask questions later, increasingly pose a risk to anyone undergoing a mental health crisis or with special needs whose disabilities may not be immediately apparent or require more finesse than the typical freeze or I'll shoot tactics. And have the police never been trained in their shooting courses to shoot for the leg instead of the kill shot to the head or heart? Indeed, disabled individuals make up a third of, or to half of all people killed by law enforcement officers. People of color are 300% more likely to be killed by police than their white counterparts. If you're black and disabled, you're even more vulnerable. So we have to look at not just the examples, but we have to look at the training. We have to look at the enforcement. We have to look what happens when a police officer could be a person who could mediate a situation and talk a situation down, de-escalate it, to try to help someone who's clearly suffering from some mental condition instead of shooting them. as if there was no other choice. You got seven cops, remember, in Times Square, seven cops surrounding a guy who had a little knife. They had full body armor on. They had everything, stun guns. And they shot him to death. Shame on those people. Shame on them. But there is no shame, because the police union and the police officers' organizations will protect their own, the Great Blue Wall. But then again, doctors protect their own. Think of all the cases of the wrong organ being operated on, the wrong medicine given. I have countless numbers of physicians and nurses tell me the horror stories that go on in hospitals. But do we change the system? Never. Do we change anything about the system? Never. Do we have a one policy that if you are sick, you can go to a hospital and be treated? At least go to these hospitals. You want to pay for medicine up the gazoot? You want to pay, you know, $150,000 to be helicoptered over if you've got a snake bot? That's your business. But for everyone else, every single medical procedure should be available for free. And that would save us $2 trillion a year. But we won't do it, because the money has gone from the pharmaceutical industry, doctors' groups, equity partnerships, hedge funds, hospital groups that make a lot of money, and it's gone into the legislators' pocket at the state level and at the federal level. It's not going to happen. So we have to look at how deadly we are as a nation. The number one cause of death in medicine, iatrogenic, means your doctor or the procedure given is going to be the number one cause of death that year, more than all heart attacks or strokes. Medicine will kill you quicker than anything else, and yet not a single discussion anywhere in the media. Why? Because we're not willing to deal with any of the problems we have in a way that Occam's razor would say, hey, let's be simple about this. Give a pharmaceutical company 200% profit over their cost, they're making 200% profit instead of 20,000% over their generic 30-day supply, so a person doesn't go broke with a drug or medical procedure. But a lot of doctors' offices, a lot of hospitals, a lot of clinics are not owned by the doctor anymore. They're owned by groups, financial groups. And these groups are the worst of all. These are economic parasites. They thrive on charging exorbitant fees. And don't let the doctor who still works there as part of his contract say, well, I no longer own it. No, you got big bucks to get out and turn over all your patients and your crew to a heartless group out of Wall Street. How many millions did you get to sell your practice? They can make hundreds of millions. Every single system we have in the United States has failed us. Every single system, every institution has failed us. Everyone. FEMA, it's a joke. It's a corrupt, vile, perverted joke. We pointed that out. I bought a tractor trailer of water and enough to make several thousand sandwiches after Hurricane Sandy and took it downtown. Where were the generators that should have been there? Zero. Were there millions of gallons of water that FEMA could have had in position at different points? So, zero. Where were the places where people could stay since they couldn't get out of their buildings or couldn't get in their buildings? Zero. I was down at Katrina in New Orleans afterwards. Zero. Every single crisis, it's zero. Where was the federal government and the state governments in Texas to see that they had generators on buildings and everyone could get a generator when it was still time to do it and install it so that their water would keep running? Zero. So just remember, a government that doesn't mind causing people in other countries to lose their rights, their health, their life, doesn't care about what happens to Americans either. And we just have one bad regime after another. Those are my thoughts. I'd like to hear yours. 888-874-4888. We're going to go to a tape. I think you'll find it of interest. I go through all these tapes to select the ones that I believe can really help us. So I'd like for you to listen up to this one. And so, Jesse, we're going to go to the let's go to the tape. Oh wait, we have a couple people missing online. We have Denise from Brooklyn, and James from Jacksonville. I'm assuming Jacksonville, Florida, and William from New Jersey. Let's go right down. William from New Jersey, your turn. You're on the air.
One thing I'd like to mention, too, maybe you could just address this one. You know, as a Christian, you have a lot of listeners who are from the church, and you have a biblical belief system, and you're followed so heavily, you know, by this type of group, and like there's a lot of missionaries, I think, even listen to you, because I've been on the mission field. I don't think you realize how worldwide your ideas on health and nutrition are. I think they're so biblically and spiritually based. But how come Christians are demonized now? We're all white races, and could you address something like that? I think
I'll be happy to address it. I addressed this yesterday, but unfortunately some of our stations were doing fundraising, so they don't realize any time you hear a fundraiser, I'm still doing a live program from Progressive Radio Network. But first of all, I have made it very clear on multiple occasions that I consider the most dangerous mind in America today, my personal opinion, D'Angelo and her White Fragility book, been on the New York Times bestseller, because now it's being demanded reading by corporation employees. And you must then subject yourself. It gets worse and worse and worse. You must subject yourself, if you're Caucasian, to accepting that you are racist from your genes. Now, what if you reverse that? What if you said, as some racist in the past said, "Boy, you're, you know, if your genes are mean, you're black, then you're a racist." Well, you'd be a laughingstock. That would be absurd. So that's a new form of racism. And what about all the gains of people? What about all the Caucasians who died in the Civil War fighting as abolitionists? What about all the abolitionists? What about all the ethical people? What about all the spiritual people? What about all the religious people throughout the world who are Caucasian? And you're talking about billions now who cannot stand racism and will do all that they can to stop it and challenge it. What about all the people who were with me when we were protesting outside the South African embassy? They were all Caucasian. Are they racist for trying to stop racism? You see, it's so absurd, it's so lacking in any evidence, except for those who are ideologues, and they need to blame someone, and therefore want to blame everyone. We would never use these generalizations. It's one thing if you say, are they racist? Of course they're racist. Should they be dealt with? To the extent the law can prevent them from engaging in racist behavior, you bet. That's reasonable, responsible, and ethical. Is a person a racist because they're born white and now must deny they're white? They must go through a whole process of programming so that they deprogram themselves if they've done nothing, if they've been a wonderful human being their whole life? You must now spend every day of your life recognizing your white privilege. You mean I've got to go around the world if I'm poor and white? I've always been poor and white, like a coal miner? And say, wow, I've had privileges I wasn't even aware of. You see, every part of the argument reframes from truth. It is ideological. It is political. It is intentional. What is the intent? To strip people of their basic appreciation of other cultures, other ethnicities. Because if Martin Luther King were here today, he would be vilified. He would be destroyed, probably assassinated by those who hold this value, because he would say, hold on a second. Over 60 years ago, I said, judge a person by the quality of their character, not the color of their skin. Now you're saying, judge a person by the color of their skin, not the quality of their character. This is not real. This is not right. This is not ethical. You're going to cause another civil war. No, it's one group of people, mainly academics at certain schools, and people who are strong ideologues. These people would have fit perfectly into creating WBAI and Pacifica's bylaws, man. Do something that never will work because it's so insane. Or be a part of the French Revolution. Yeah, hang out with Robespierre. These people are unflappable and unwavering in their demonization of people. Why? I can't tell you that. I'm not in their mind. what they hate about themselves, a failed life, are they projecting upon other people, their lack of happiness, their lack of spiritual quality. Don't let it get you down. Just remember, as long as you're living a decent, ethical life, you care about all people, irrespective of their ethnicity, you're on the right side of truth. And to all the people of different beliefs and faiths, I respect people of faith. I can have any discussion with any of them from different religions and beliefs, and we should always be open to dialoguing and discussing. Okay, thank you for your call. Now I'm looking at the clock. I want to get some of this in, but I will take a call from Denise from Brooklyn. Hi, Denise, your turn. You're on the air. Hi, Denise. She's not on. Let's go to Denise from New Jersey. Denise from New Jersey, are you on? I can hear you, yes.
Okay, hi, yes. Okay, so I just think we're in the midst of a great awakening that there's no other time in history that has paralleled this. And it's really interesting when you were saying how there's only one point of view now that's being foisted upon us through the media, and anyone else that has any type of other point of view, they're being crushed or quashed. I actually see it firsthand from my daughter who works at a university, and it's really scary what college kids are thinking now. Most of them are embracing, believe it or not, communism, and they actually have gotten tattoos of a hammer and sickle, and they think that's cool. It's really scary to think that these people are going to grow up and run our world. So I don't know what's going on, but I think people are waking up, and the people that can see the truth are being suppressed. But
where have these young people, your daughter included, where have they actually participated in building something from scratch, a small business, or joined an organization to help that organization, like, for example, Doctors Without Borders, or one of the environmental groups that are legitimate? When have they gone out to plant trees by the thousands in their local communities and spent their days trying to get donors so that their community is a green community and abiding? When did they go vegan and for what reasons? And are they a healthy vegan or just a political vegan so they'll eat hamburgers and other things that are made out of, you know, artificial meat, genetically engineered meat? Do they think through the consequences? How literate are they on the world we live in? If you mentioned that you're concerned about Africa, how many countries are in Africa? Would they know 54? Would they know the history of each country? Would they know why we've intervened in those countries and what we've exploited? Would they know that there are 5.2 million people killed in the Congo because of the cell phones they're using? That's real communism, isn't it? Let me use this cell phone. Oh, and by the way, the person that died making the cell phone was from Africa, a person of color, and I don't care. I want my cell phone. You're dealing with the most mind-numbingly stupid group of people in American history. They don't use common sense or reason, and frequently they're, even when they come from families that try to give them a real understanding of life, they're influenced by the propaganda of their peers. And peer pressure is a big determining factor about what someone will or will not be able to do on their own. Let's see if we have Denise from Brooklyn back on. Denise from Brooklyn, are you back on? No?
Yeah.
Okay.
I want to respond. Hello?
Yes, hi, Denise. Please respond. Yes.
I wanted to respond to your original question about why don't we see people trying to speak truth to the public and inform them of what's actually going on in the environment. I think really it's because we are not owning our responsibility as individual people. You had spoke to the gentleman that was a Christian. I'm a Buddhist. I understand exactly what's being said, but we have to take responsibility first for ourselves. We have to create value within our own hearts. And then, you know, and then the rest gets taken care of. If we can do that collectively, if we can start that like today, and start to move in an ethical way from the standpoint of our hearts, no matter what race, color, nationality, or proclivity. you'll find that the environment will be fine. We are our country. And once we start to do that, to really take responsibility for our actions and what we feel is right and wrong and treat people the way we want to be treated, things will be fine. The brother was speaking about how Christianity is being defiled quite a bit right now. But if you go to a church, a mosque, or if you're chanting in a temple, if you allow your establishment to misrepresent what you believe in your heart is supposed to be something about goodness, then you are defiling your own environment. And I think that's where we're having the problems, that we're looking too wide, too expansive. Look inside first. Before you get up in the morning, treat yourself well so that you can treat others well. We are struggling. We're being distracted by outside things. First, let's really take responsibility for being, as you said, a good person, or being the best person that you can be. I greatly appreciate you because you teach us how to strengthen our body and how to clear our mind so that we can speak and be who we are. I really have such appreciation for your talents and insights in how the body functions and how it can be at its top performance so that we can allow our spirits to flow, you know, and really permeate the environment. There are a lot of good people of all nations and nationalities and proclivities. There's a lot of us. But there are a segment of this population who is using different entities and different situations to work so that they can get the benefit. And I really think the real problem in this country is not racism, it's wealthism. The people who have extraordinary, unbelievable amounts of wealth.
Let's just focus on that for 1 minute. You are correct. But remember earlier I said our number one problem is the division in America is based upon class. That's wealth. Remember I said those who have more money than what they could ever spend in multiple lifetimes and those who don't have enough to meet their basic needs? A nation of people who cared about one another, who saw the common bonds of our humanity, who realized both the king and the peasant go in the same dirt when their life passes. When people respect what it is to be the other, then you won't have inequality. You'll have giving. When you have a gift, you give that gift. And those who have the gift today, some of them, keep the gift and want everyone else to give to them. So when we do not have a race problem as such, we have racists, yes, and we have laws and we have protests to challenge them. But the vast majority of people are good people, they just want to live their lives in a peaceful way. They want happiness. They want joy. And one after another crisis is now throwing them. Before COVID, it was income inequality. There was consumer debt. There was credit card debt, student debt. There was mortgage debt. And instead of forgiving that debt, those in power, the banks and the oligarchs behind the banks, they doubled down. They extracted every cent of exorbitant interest from those people with payday loans of debt percentages going 500 to 1,000%, and credit card debt. They want you to miss a payment. They want you not to be able to pay the full amount owed so they can increase your interest across the board. So as long as we have a society where a relatively small group of people have an inordinate amount of control over our lives, then we will not have that equality. I'm Gary Null. We're out of time. Thank you all for calling. I'm sorry we couldn't get to more people. But everyone who had something to say had something that was meaningful to say. And that's all we do each day. Try to empower each other. Empower with positive. Disempower with negative. Let's keep it positive. Let's keep it constructive. That's how we live a longer, healthier, more meaningful life. Have a nice day, everyone.